Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for this morning is United States against Aramilli.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Edward Gentz and I represent the appellant Aramilli. Your Honor, this case, although facially, seems fairly simple, but I think it's fairly significant. In this case, the defendant was charged with a sex offense. He was of sexual conduct on an airplane. And the evidence against the defendant was scant. The evidence based on the facts in this case is fairly clear that it was an assault. But the evidence does not talk to, and that is very little to do with the issue of sexual gratification. And as a result of that...
But that's not the only way this statute can be violated.
It isn't, but it's what the government argued. The statute and the instruction of this case basically says touching the genitalia, anus, groin, breast, inner thigh, etc., with the intent to abuse, humiliate, harass or degrade, or to arouse or gratify the sexual desire.
Abuse, humiliate, harass, etc.
But the fact of the matter is, in this particular case, there was very little argument, none by the government, at anything other than sexual desire or of any person. And if you take other aspects of this case, abuse, humiliate, harass or degrade, basically, there was a question as to whether he did any of those things.
But you haven't complained about that part of the instruction.
No, I have not. I have not complained about that part of the instruction. But what I'm suggesting to Your Honor, that the use of the prior acts under 413 in this case was prejudicial to the defendant. And under 403, and a test under 403 should not have been allowed. The acts were not similar. The acts... were much more graphic than the one in the instant case, and I think if you read the case absent 413, I think the case is a case that should have probably been won. But 433 makes it impossible.
Well, 413 is part of the federal rules of evidence. We've discussed how it fits in cases like Rogers.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Your Honor.
Please.
The fact of the matter, it is part of the rules of evidence. But the fact of the matter is, if you look at every case that's quoted using 413, basically they're all pedophile cases. That statute essentially was written in order to enhance the credibility of someone who was sexually abused, and basically there was credibility issues. There was no credibility issue in this case. It's a simple matter of what occurred. There is no.
Rule 413 just says the evidence is admissible. It doesn't say for credibility or for something else. And one may think well or poorly of Rule 413, and you, of course, know that the Judicial Conference unanimously told Congress it was a lousy idea. But there it is, and what it says is it's admissible.
And so,
there's nothing left, it seems
and
to
so
me.
What I, what, and I, but under 403, when you look at the facts in this case, I think you have to look very carefully in a case like this where there's no issue as to anything other than intent.
The district court judge was aware of all of this. She understood what the prior crimes were. She had to make an assessment as to whether this was even relevant on a scale of 1 to 100, where 1 is the least similar and 100 is the most. This has to have been around an 85. I mean, there were differences, of course, as you've pointed out, but there are striking similarities. And our question isn't just what do we think, but did the district court judge abuse her discretion in allowing this to come in?
Loath as I am to say anything negative of a fine judge like Judge Lefkoe, I basically disagreed with what she did. The fact of the matter is, other than the fact that it was a woman on an airplane, there were no other similarities. Other than the fact that it was a person who did two acts 10 years earlier.
And it was surreptitious sexual touching.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
I mean, it was a woman on an airplane who was surreptitiously touched in a sexual manner.
I agree. They were, but we were talking about two prior incidents that were 10 years. I think one was 1999 and one was 2002. And basically, what because of that, he was, in this particular case, in my opinion, because the judge disagreed, I wasn't a trial lawyer, but the fact of the matter is, in this particular case, I think where there is scant evidence, Your Honors should look very carefully.
I don't know why you keep characterizing this as a case with scant evidence anyway. The victim testified. She, you know, practically decked the guy on the plane.
And it was practically stipulated to. No one's suggesting that it wasn't.
Right. So how can this have been prejudicial when the victim testified? I don't see this as a scant evidence case, to be honest.
Your Honor, there's nothing. This case was argued to the jury by the prosecution based on prior sexual abuse. The argument basically suggested that it was sexual gratification. 265 of the transcript talks to the issue of sexual
gratification. And that's an inference that one could draw from this evidence. The area touched, the manner of doing, isn't there? There's some evidence about trying to conceal it with a newspaper and so forth. Seems to me that's an inference the jury could draw.
And you could equally draw a conclusion that he did it for whatever thrill and it wasn't sexual gratification. I think if that was the case, and if it was such an easy case, why did they have to introduce the prior convictions, which I believe in this particular case was prejudicial? And basically, there was no issue once those were in. The fact of the matter is, when you have a case where there is no direct evidence of sexual gratification, when you have a case where there's no issue with credibility of what happened, to put in 10-year-old convictions and to use those 10-year-old convictions to bootstrap the sexual arousal element of the case is what we object to, Your Honor. The second, of course, argument, and this relates to the instruction. We've written a letter regarding the instruction and what Gomez says, and we're suggesting that the instruction was inappropriate. One of the things that I point out...
What's the part that you like least about the instruction? The district court modifies the pattern instruction. Of course, Gomez is focusing on 404B, not 413. The judge does use the word propensity to commit sexual assault in this instruction, but that's a permissible use under 413.
Your Honor, what I pointed out specifically is the section, I think the last, next to the last sentence, you may not consider it for any other purpose. And that was left out of the government's instruction, the instruction the judge approved, and by the way, is in the 404B instruction. It just
but of course,
there.
This isn't Rule 404B.
And I understand.
There is no limitation on the purpose for which the evidence can be considered. Where would a limitation come from?
You mean, well, would there be a limitation if it was done for prejudice? Would there be a limitation if it was done?
All the prosecutor's evidence is designed to increase the chance of conviction.
Your Honor, the only
prejudice means
the only objection.
The whole difference between Rule 404B and Rule 413 is that 404B limits the use of evidence, and 413 allows the use
relevance.
Of evidence.
No, 413 says relevance. It doesn't say propensity, and that was our objection.
Right, and you
relevance.
Don't give limiting instructions for relevant evidence.
But if it isn't relevant, you can't consider it, and
then you can't admit it at all. I'm trying to figure out why there would be a limiting instruction once the judge concludes it's relevant, and that's a question for the judge. What would limit the use of Rule 413 evidence to a particular purpose?
If prejudice under 404B,
that would exclude the evidence. What would limit the use to a particular purpose?
The limitation would be as to, it says relevant, and if it's not relevant, it shouldn't be used. And there was a
then it's inadmissible.
Section, there
right?
was
you're,
a
you're not getting my question.
No, I do get your
assuming
question.
Assuming it's admissible,
to talk my way out of it.
Yeah,
I get your question, Judge. I'm just trying to figure out an answer that I like.
Why don't you think about it? You might want to save your last minute for rebuttal. In any event,
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. You can raise the podium if you want to, Mr. Haxel. There's a button underneath that will make it.
Given that Mr. Getz needs to come back, I'll leave it.
Oh, okay.
As it is.
As you wish.
May it please the Court, Bowling Haxel for the United States. The District Court did not abuse its discretion when it determined that evidence of two prior sexual assaults committed by the defendant was admissible under Rule 413. The Court properly determined the relevant purposes of that evidence. The Court also determined that the evidence was substantially similar to the prior cases. In each case, the defendant fondled a woman with whom he had no prior contact while seated near them on an
airplane. What does similarity have to do with anything? It's not in Rule 413. You're referring to the old four-part test that bit the dust in Gomez, even for Rule 404B. Why would it play any role with respect to Rule 413?
In this case, Your Honor, which obviously was prior to...
I understand why this was argued in the District Court. What I don't understand is why you're arguing it to us after Gomez ditched that approach, even for Rule 404B.
I think some of the factors go to the 403 balancing and whether or not they are an explicit test.
I don't think that we went through the process of an en banc in Gomez only to resurrect that four-part test one rule away.
In looking at the totality of the evidence, the relevance of the evidence, even under Gomez, is clear in part due to some of the similarities of the conduct.
So in other words, you're saying that you're trying to prove his propensity to do this kind of thing. The inference, if you did it before, you probably did it again. And if the thing done before was quite similar, then maybe that's a stronger inference than if it wasn't.
Not only for propensity, but for some of the other relevant factors we highlighted, his intent, the lack of mistake or accident. For all of those reasons, it was relevant.
He wasn't just bumping into her. Yeah.
Exactly. And as the District Court also noted, there was little, if any, danger of unfair prejudice to the defendant. The District Court noted that the prior offenses were not of an inflammatory nature such that it was likely to overwhelm the jury or inflame their passions.
They're fairly inflammatory, though, I have to say. I mean, it's gross to think that you can't sit on an airplane without somebody groping you. What was your evidence apart from this prior crime?
The evidence was the testimony of the complaining witness, who testified as to the specific contacts, who testified as to the escalating nature of the contacts. The specific charged conduct was the third time the defendant had groped her. The first time was the outside of the thigh. She felt it was a brushing, as of a newspaper. The second time became more aggressive, and then finally the third time went to her inner thigh and up her shorts. So her testimony, in addition to the other acts evidence, was what was presented to the jury.
And did the jury hear about her response to his actions?
It did. It heard as to her response. She called him a pig and a pervert, and as Your Honor noted, she struck him. The jury also heard about the defendant's response. As soon as the plane reached the gate, he attempted to jump up and run off of the plane, and only her husband blocking the aisle prevented her from doing so.
Was there some evidence about him wanting to settle the matter?
He did make comments about settling it civilly, which the government believed referred to essentially a payment as opposed to just talking it out, civil in that nature. So all of this evidence was presented. And ultimately, the District Court's prediction that, although Your Honor is correct, it is gross, but it's not so inflammatory as to be unduly prejudicial. And in fact, it's far less prejudicial than some of the other other acts evidence permitted. Sexual assaults of the defendant's children, sexual assaults of other minors, that has been determined to not be unduly prejudicial by this court. The District Court also provided an instruction that did limit the use of the testimony. The government was also cautioned in how it was to present the direct evidence of the prior acts and did so, specifically not calling one of the victims, presenting the evidence through the agent. ultimately, the district court's prediction about the prejudicial effect was borne out by the evidence at trial. As to the jury instruction, it was a clear and accurate statement of the law. It did not serve to confuse the jury. It did not prejudice the defendant. So unless the panel has additional...
So was there any... There must have been other instructions about considering the evidence for this trial, you know, this crime, etc.
There was... make sure I understand the court's question. This was not an instruction in isolation. The jury was also instructed that the government had to prove each of the elements, that they didn't have to forgo an element simply because he committed a prior crime. Exactly right. And this did limit the evidence. The jury was instructed to keep in mind that the defendant was on trial for this specific case as opposed to the prior acts.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
So in total, and looking at all the instructions, the jury was repeatedly reminded that the government bore the burden of proof, had to prove its elements beyond a reasonable doubt. For these reasons, the government would ask the court to affirm the conviction and sentence of the defendant. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Haxel. Anything further, Mr. Genson?
I think I have a minute.
You do have just about a minute. We'll give you a minute.
No, Judge Easterbrook, I haven't figured out an answer to your question. But I would like to point out, Your Honor, that 403...
Be sure to speak up, please.
403, I'm sorry. 403 in this case, I would suggest, is what should be considered with regard to the prejudice in this case. This case was tried... based on the prior convictions. This case was not tried based on what this young lady said. The fact of the matter is the prejudice in offering those overwhelms the probative value of it. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.